And now, get ready, folks. It's time for Banter with Bob Sherwood and Dan Snell. Banter. And now, here's Bob and Dan.
Hey, guys and gals. Okay, it's Tuesday afternoon, and I can tell you that I'm a little bit frightened. And I've watched the stock market for 50 years, and I've never seen it go bad or go down this much in a few days. And I'm sitting here thinking about people that have, you know, 150 or 200,000 in 401ks. They now have probably 30% less. And if it would decide to come back, it might take a year for it to come back to where it was before. The overall concept that's going on in my mind, my little bitty mind, is that is globalization, can you really stop globalization? Now, globalization has been a theory for years, and it basically says that manufacturing moves toward the cheapest labor source. And that can't be stopped. That's why Boeing, for example, they build their airplanes with parts from 70 countries. And that's why Navarro today, he made this, he stated something that was accurate, but obviously it infuriated Musk, and it would infuriate me when Navarro said that Musk is not a car manufacturer. He's a car assembler. Well, this is it's kind of a play on words, right? What does it mean? What's the difference between an assembler and a manufacturer? Well, I can tell you big differences when it comes to borrowing money. And I'll give you a specific example. So years ago, I was president of EDC. We went to the Bank of America and we said, we need to borrow some money. And they said, what do? I said, we manufacture screw pumps and filter presses for the water treatment area. They said, fine, we'll come over to your offices and take a look. So they came over and they said, well, where's your manufacturing? I said, well, we subcontracted to a company in Minneapolis and we subcontract some of our parts with blenders in Germany. We subcontract our engines to Caterpillar. And they said, well, you're not a manufacturer. Okay. So we thought about that. And, We then went out and basically leased a bigger building, 25,000 square foot building. And in the back of the building, we brought some of the parts in at more expense to bring them in and started making them in the back of our building. And we had Bank of America come over again. And they said, oh, I see you're a manufacturer, because they could see people in the back making stuff. So they say, oh, then we'll give you the loan. So what I mean is that I've argued for years, Apple computer company is not a manufacturer. Well, they don't make the Apple computer. I don't think they make any part of it. They design the chips. They subcontract all the other things to companies in China. So I know that Musk was really infuriated by that, because he may have debt agreements that call him a manufacturer. And by calling him an assembler, that might change the debt agreement that he has. And believe me, that's a fact. These agreements are made, you know, he's an assembler. That's different than being a manufacturer. Assemblers don't own anything proprietary generally. Manufacturers do. But if you go back to his plant in California, of course, you'll see things being assembled. So what does it mean to be a manufacturer? I don't know. Do you have to like make the steel to be a steel company? Anyway, it's the point. So Navarro and Musk are at it. Musk called Navarro he said he's as dumb as a stack of bricks. No, he said he's dumber than a stack of bricks, right? Navarro said something that he probably regrets. Now, here's the beauty of it. Who's that girl that's the press secretary, press person for Trump?
Oh,
She
my.
said, oh, this is an
Caroline
example of our,
Levitt.
yeah, she said, this is an example of our transparency, right? We don't hide our disagreements. Well, one thing for sure, Musk isn't, but I'd say Navarro better be careful about annoying Musk, because Musk is a lot wealthier than Navarro and could do lots of different things with Starlink and the space program and electric vehicle manufacturing and all the other things he's got his hands into. So
Yeah, you know,
that's
they're right
going on.
there. Peter Navarro. I've been watching him. I've been kind of a student of him because in Trump's first term and post term, he was, very outspoken. Then he wouldn't testify before Congress. That's his badge of honor, he believes, and he went to jail for 4 months. I'm just he's kind of a conspiracy theory guy when it comes to the 2020 election, and so those guys I'm not always fans of. We ought to invite him, you and Peter Navarro. Now there would be, I could be like the referee. I could wear my black and white referee, uniform. But you guys would agree on a lot. But I'm not a fan of Peter Navarro, and I would tell him that if he was on Banter. Folks are listening to Banter with Bob and Dan, a couple common guys just talking about stuff. And you learn a lot listening to us. But Peter Navarro, I think that he just dreams up stuff in his mind and puts it out there because he's got a platform because Donald Trump has appointed him as an economic advisor of sorts.
Well, he might be looking for another job because when he says things like he said, it really does show he doesn't understand the difference between a manufacturer and an assembler. And according to his terminology, nobody makes anything except the Chinese, I guess, because Apple assembles their computers, Dell assembles their computers. Maybe there aren't any manufacturers according to him, but that's kind of a, some people might say, well, that's a nuanced argument. Who cares? Well, debt instruments, a debt instrument is like an agreement to borrow money and pay money back. Very often those things have very, very specific definitions in them. I just gave you an example of one from my own direct experience, right? And I gave you an example of how a bank, if they don't see anybody in the back nailing something, hammering something, welding something, or grinding something, you're not a manufacturer, right? But the minute you have somebody welding back there, you're now a manufacturer. I mean, that's how nuanced some of these things are. And Bank of America first said, "Well, God, you're not a manufacturer. You're just a consultant." I said, "No. We have like 30 engineers back there designing pumps that we subcontract to other people to make the steel." And they said, "Well, then you're not a manufacturer. They're the manufacturer." Anyway,
Yeah,
so.
so and it leads us, further down the path about globalization conversation I think we want to have. But this Peter Navarro, he made up this fictitious guy that he has quoted on Fox News as an expert economist. And I've heard him say this, so I looked up this guy. He says, well, Ron Vara or Vara or something like the Ravara says this. Ron Vara is a fictitious character in a book that Peter Navarro that he wrote. So you've written four books, great books. Dave Dawson, right? David Dawson. It would be like if you said, well, economic worldwide economic genius David Dawson said, and you'd say that on the television network, and David Dawson is fictitious. And Peter Navarro quotes Ron Vara. And you got Caroline Levitt, the spokesperson from the White House, saying, "Well, Navarro's great. He's got an expert, Ron Vara." They say this stuff. They just make it up, and if you say it enough times, then it must be true. Whew.
What are we going to do? He's from
Globalization.
the heartland of America. People that what I call show up for work and grow corn, and
Yeah.
chickens and hogs and cows and go to work for a living. I don't know what we're going to do if our savings are wiped out. Now, I'm not pressing the panic button. I'm not saying I'm panicking, but I've made an analogy before that what we're going through now is not unlike what the country went through in World War II. We're not giving up our young people to die. I don't make that analogy. But in terms of the fact that in World War II, we were trying to finance the war. So we're basically loaning money from workers to the government to finance the war. Now, here we are years and years later, and somebody's financing it. And I'll tell you something, even J.D. Vance is starting to bother me because he said something the other day about, this is a paraphrase, but it's kind of a weird thing to say. He said that we're borrowing money from Chinese peasants, right? Borrowing money from these peasants who make the things that we buy. And I'm thinking, well, first, no one's going to understand that because nobody knows. I don't know any Chinese peasant that I borrowed money from. And if he's a peasant, he probably didn't have any money to loan me,
you know,
right?
He speaks like a millennial. I mean, and with all respect to millennials, I have children that are millennials, but there's a certain degree of, in millennials, you just say what you want to say, blurt it out, call people names, and to hell with everybody, you baby boomers. You're a boomer, I'm a boomer. Hey, boomer, I don't care what you think. And I don't think that's good for J.D. Vance because he represents you and I, baby boomers. He represents the greatest generation, if they're still alive, some of them, and he represents everybody. So you got to have a little decorum and behavior that represents the country and the flag, not just your own opinion.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to call. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not changing my mind with respect to my position on tariffs, but I because of the stress that people are under. J.D. Vance, I would bet he gets 300 phone calls a day from people who say, my 401k, my employee, plan for my employees is now down, $40 million. What am I going to do? What are you going to do? And he's telling people, well, stay the course,
Tough it up. Yeah. Yeah, Peter Thiel can write him a check. Peter Thiel, billionaire Peter Thiel, he's not going to write you and I a check.
You are enjoying banter with Bob and Dan. Sometimes it seems like they might require protective spacesuits to work together. Likewise, some families don't always feel like they're in a beautiful field walking, holding hands off into the sunset. They don't have protection and help they'd like. Across America, there are families who face not only banter, but genuine hurtful moments that impact marriages and children. Blended families, stepfamilies, and even single parents every single day face very challenging dynamics and relationships. USABFA is an organization founded to offer understanding, encouragement, daily tips, resources, and services. If you're a single parent or in a blended family, check out USABFA.com. That's USABFA.com.
The issues in front of us are, for example, what if these tariffs don't work, and on the other side we're back where we started from, and we're not in any better shape?
Well, and the challenge is, as the America, the global leader for many thoughts, is we're going to be damaging. Now, what if you get South Korea and Japan and the Philippines and all those countries in Southeast Asia decide, well, we're going to kind of trade with each other, and Canada, we'll get Canada, and people are going to bypass us.
Here's why they can't bypass us.
What?
Here's why they can't bypass us. Because we're a big buyer. You can't bypass buyers. We're a buyer. That's Trump's whole foundational theory, is because we're a big buyer, such as Walmart or anybody, right? they cannot do without us buying from them. That's the issue, right? And right. And he has other things that he can do too. In fact, I'm in favor of him. I'm in favor of sending a note to Germany and saying, we've had a big military base there for years, which is a big add to your economy. We're just closing it down. We're going to bring all those people home, close the military base down. We probably pour billions into their economy because we got a military base there. We got the same thing in Japan. Just close those things down. He knows he's got other levers, and that's what he's dealing with. Europe needs a kick in the butt, frankly, you know, and that's one thing he could do. We got military bases in, you know, different places around the world, and I understand the military bases were acquired in the 50s and even the 60s. Why? Because we didn't have a plane or a missile that we could launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base in Missouri, hit somebody in Dubai or in Iran. Now we can. We can launch a plane from the Whitefield or White Force or Whitefield Air Force Base
Whiteman,
and bomb somebody in Tehran. We don't need a military base in near Iran or Beirut or all these places, right? So it's here's what I'm really saying. The entire structure, financial structure, communication structure too, of the world is just totally changed. But what it's based on now, what the military structure is based on, agreements we made after World War II. Japan, you cannot have your own army, we'll protect you. Germany, you cannot have your own army, you know, blah, blah, blah. We had all these places that they couldn't have their own army, and we said, we'll protect them. But that was in the days when you need guys on the ground to go protect them, not when you can bomb somebody from 8,000 miles away. And then you got the whole communication network.
Yeah, and that communication network ties into the why are we moving to globalization? I mean, it used to be, think about it, it used to be ships that would transfer things back and forth, right? Even letters and communication, and there before the telephone. And so before the internet, everything's changed where everything is instantaneous. Financial transactions are instantaneous. Communication, the red phone from the White House to Moscow. Everything is instantaneous, and so things are information, news, everything is instant. So that means trade becomes more instant.
Here's where the impact of that falls. And if you've listened to anybody on TV lately, I was thinking about, who's our favorite guy? You say I'm
Bill like. O'Reilly. You are Bill. O'Reilly. You and Bill O'Reilly, brothers from another mother.
Bill O'Reilly said something last night that was profound, something I've said before. So I guess we do think alike.
If Bill O'Reilly were here, he would say, well, of course, what else would you expect?
Yes. And here was his point. He said, look, the whole way we receive information is just dramatically changed. And he says, for example, my kids don't read the newspaper. They don't even watch TV. They don't get any of their information from MSNBC or NBC or ABC, or they get it from other ways. They're getting it from YouTube videos and from other communication channels they're in. He said, but we still have a lot of people in the United States that get news from TV. There's no news on TV, as Bill O'Reilly says. There isn't any news. We all know Fox is prejudiced. And the rest of them are prejudiced on the other side. So none of them are not biased. He said, I'm unbiased. I'm unbiased. Bill O'Reilly is. He said, I'm just factual. And I think he's right.
I think he absolutely is one of the best of the best.
He said, he'll say, you know, Trump is horrible. He's just horrible. He says things that are screwy. He hyperbolates things. That's just factual. Now, on the other hand, the tariffs are factual, they're real, and the impact of those have yet to be decided. We don't know that. He said, I don't know how it's going to come out. Then he said, I'm an educated person, but I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months as a result of these tariffs. We could have a financial breakdown. I mean, when we're losing thousands of dollars, what did we lose, like $2 trillion in value?
I think it was $4 trillion.
And Riley said, what's his name?
Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly says, he says, it's on paper. I get that. But eventually somebody has to sell to get cash.
Now, this kind of inspires me to want to get Bill O'Reilly on banter, and then I'll replay that section. Mr. O'Reilly, it's great to have you, but Bob loves you, and I think you're just like Bob. But here's where Bob says, what's his name again? Of course, I can't always remember names, so I'm just having fun with you. I forget a lot of stuff.
I want our show to be like that. I mean, if we're going to have a biased opinion, then I'm saying, okay, but we just call it what it is. It's a biased opinion.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes he'll say, you know, that's my opinion. You don't have to agree with it. Maybe you don't agree with it. Or I don't care if you agree with it or not. I'm just saying that's my opinion, right?
Yeah.
And so he's very, very frank about it. And I believe that, actually, I believe I'm like that. I'll say, here's an opinion. It's strictly an opinion. It could be wrong. And that's where we are now. My opinion is that we don't know what's going to happen. We have placed, I've been part of it. I voted for Trump. We placed a huge bet on restructuring the economics of the world. Restructuring it by putting tariffs, hopefully at zero between countries, right? Huge bet. If we lose that bet, then globalization is here to stay, and the Democrats will run the Republicans so far out of Washington, D.C., they won't be able to get a plane back in there to land, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about that. If everything was zero and zero, nobody charged a tariff, how would that affect the European Union? How would that affect China? How much of their economy is dependent, or their government being run is dependent on tariffs that the United States pays them?
Well, let's ask it a different way. How much of the imbalance of trade would they give up if it was a free trade? They won't give up at all, right? Which means we'll still be a net buyer of goods from China. That's maybe in 30 years that would change, but it isn't going to change in a couple of years because we'll still be a net buyer. So, but the imbalance might change. So that means they take some sort of a hit in their economy. So, for example, let's say there's a $800 billion imbalance of trade now between China and the United States. And we even go to as close to zero as we can get. We'll never quite get there, right? So maybe now instead of an $800 billion, we still have a $400 billion imbalance. Well, the other $400 billion is the impact on China. So would it have impact there? Sure. It would impact their businesses. All the businesses? Maybe not. But here's the good things that would happen because of this, right? All the Chinese EV companies could come into the United States. We, on the other hand, could start selling cars in China. Now, the argument for free trade is that then the best country wins, the best manufacturer wins. If you arbitrarily change a trade balance, then the best manufacturer doesn't win. Now, we've criticized Europe for years because they subsidize the Airbus, and they do. We don't subsidize Boeing. Boeing's got to make it on its own as shareholders, right? Airbus runs out of money. They just ask the union for another $400 billion. What I'm saying, that's not exactly right what I'm saying. This is how O'Reilly would explain it, right? It's not exactly right what I'm saying, but you get the idea. They subsidize. We don't subsidize Boeing right now. Now, having said all that, so now we get back to the issue of if the trade is zero between countries, which it'll probably never be, right? Because if tomorrow Ford could start shipping cars into Germany, you know, A, they got to get somebody to sell them there. They got to show they're better than a BMW. Germans love BMWs and Mercedes. Who knows if they're going to like Fords? So there's a marketing issue there, too. Ford might decide, you know, it isn't working. I mean, after all, they tried to sell, what was it, the Opel. The Opel was a car they made in Europe, right?
And I Good guess memory.
It was a big fiasco. So in principle, this is kind of why I like Musk. Musk said, look, tomorrow, Europe and the United States should have free trade. Just free trade. You guys want to ship cars in the United States? Fine, ship them. We're going to ship our cars in Europe and we'll sell them the best we can. You sell yours the best you can here. Makes total sense to me, right? there'll still be an imbalance of trade. We'll still be at a negative trade for Europe for a while, but it's better than the way it is right now. Because right now we're locked out of selling into country. Go try to start an American company in France. Good luck. All right. France is easier than China, but it has some of the same issues, right? But the French company can come over to the United States and start up a company and start selling whatever they're making. So that's fundamentally what the argument is and what it should be. And Musk is right. And the reason I like what Musk is saying, he's saying, look, rather than talk about negotiating with 70 countries, let's look at the big players. Europe, big player. We're a big player. Let's agree on Europe and the United States. That changes a lot because China wants to sell to Europe. So does Russia want to sell to Europe. So now Europe is now in a little better position because they can say, well, we don't need necessarily ship to China because we can ship more stuff in the United States. So Europe now is a little bigger position. I always think of the trade as two farmers. One grows corn, another grows wheat, right? And the one farmer doesn't need any wheat, but he likes to sell his corn. And so his economy grows and the other guy goes bankrupt. But then another guy goes bankrupt, by the way, the corn grower has no one to sell his corn to, right? So he's motivated to keep the wheat guy in business. So the trade is like that too. We don't want all these companies to go bankrupt, but we just want a little fairer deal on what we can do.
Do you think though, I mean, I again go back to the way it was articulated to the American people that's hurting Trump, that the idea is good, but that, and you said it now two or three times, different shows, the American people probably aren't tough enough or patient enough for this. So, I mean, it could be disaster in the coming year with prices and in our status and our presence as a world leader.
Yeah, because if people stop buying from us, we got the reverse problem. It's one thing to say, well, let's use the Walmart example. Walmart is telling all its suppliers, hey, you guys eat the tariffs. Well, let's see. Maybe a couple suppliers get up in the morning and they say, we're not going to eat the tariffs. We're going to start selling our products into Europe or India or Bangladesh or someplace else, right? We won't sell to you anymore. Now, Walmart's got to think about something because if they don't have stuff to sell, their revenue goes down. So it all, again, it comes down to, you know, who can last the longest in this kind of situation. And again, no, I don't know if America can do it. In other words, World War II, I don't know how America got behind that war. And I know a lot of people were against the war, right? And somehow when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, even Roosevelt started calling them dirty Japs. He was the president, right?
But, yeah.
And they immediately took, 48,000 Japanese and put them in intern camps, right?
And it did take 15 years after the war, I think, for Americans to look at Japanese people in America without some form of remembrance.
I think it took at least that long. I think you're absolutely right. So kind of what I'm really now driving at is that, again, I'm going to come back to my central theory, not theory, but my central argument that's going on is globalization the way of the future, in which case every country winds up doing those things it does best. For example, in a pure globalization economy, what does America do? We build weapons, right?
Yeah.
China builds electronics in Japan, right? Because that's what they do best. We build weapons because apparently that's what we do best, right? No other country builds as good of weapons as we do. That's why, what is our biggest export? It's weapons to other countries.
Yeah, that just gives me a great idea here. You know, bing, 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 where's my idea light bulb here? Bing, 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 the light bulb came on in my head. Okay, you banter listeners, if any of you out there, we could have a global broadcast podcast. It would be called a Globcast. I like that. I just invented that. A global podcast called a Globcast. Like it, Bob?
Go ahead.
I don't know. Come on, say you like it.
I don't know what
we
you're
get
talking about.
Our friends, the friends of banter, if they have somebody that live in Europe or in Asia or in Africa, we want to get those people on our podcast and ask them, are you seeing the attitude by the people in those countries? What are they saying about America?
Dan, we don't have any friends of our podcast. How many emails a day do you get? I get one.
But you don't think both of them, between the three of them, between the three friends, we don't have anybody that knows somebody in Europe?
No, no, that's not the question. Of course
we don't have any friends of the podcast.
I have a granddaughter right now who's doing a journey all throughout France.
Let's get them on.
Okay. All right. I don't want to do an anecdotal survey of one person, right?
Well, let's get three or four. The friends, which all three friends of the podcast can.
Okay, then we're just inviting them right now, and I'm sure they're going to be on.
Yeah,
so.
Folks, write us at webtalkwithbob@gmail.com.
Nobody writes us there.
Yes, you've gotten emails.
Two or three, right?
Yeah, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Because we want you to be sure and like, subscribe. Today, if you heard something, share, send it to somebody. Say, listen to these guys. You may like us or you may think we're goofy, but we are nonstop talking about stuff that matters to most American people. That's us, Bob.
So, do you think that Houston got a fair game last night, that the call was legitimate on Duke? Florida.
Yeah, I'm Florida. Yeah. Florida. Well, you know, I actually thought overall the referees called a really good game. I always say, you know, when I get fans screaming at me or coaches screaming at me or players, I'll tell a coach, like if a coach screams at me, says, Danny, how can you make that call? And I'll say, Coach, I'll say a couple things. Sometimes I'll say, Coach, 8% of the time, a national study says referees make mistakes. They just burst out laughing because they don't know what to say to that. And then I say, and 88% of the time, when a coach says he sees it different, the coach is wrong. And so there were a couple calls last night that, I can see why they would be upset about. But overall, I thought the guys did a great job officiating that game. I was cheering for Houston, although I did have in one of my picks, two of my brackets, Florida going all the way. And I actually had the final four score. You got to put in, what do you think the score of the final four game will be? I had the score as Florida 65, which they had, but I had Duke that was going to beat Houston.
Yeah.
I had 65-63, the exact score, only it wasn't Houston. It was Duke in my bracket.
Well, I bet on Florida last night, so I won. I was happy about that. But I still can't understand why the Houston guy, when he had the shot in the last part of the game, why didn't take the shot?
Well, that guy was up in the air. He knew it was going to get blocked.
Okay.
But what I would have done is I would have thrown it. Of course, it's easy for me to say this. Something other than just let the ball drop.
Shoot it anyway. That's the whole point. You can't win by not shooting it. If you shoot it, it might get blocked.
Yeah, I feel sorry for that kid.
It might get a foul. But by not shooting it, it's like a short putt. 100% of your short putts never go in.
Yeah, I feel sorry for that kid. It would have been blocked. If he would have shot it, it would have been blocked.
We don't know. The person I was watching with, my son, who's an expert, he said, well, he didn't shoot it because it would have been blocked. And I said, well, that's not the point. At least if he shoots it, he's got the ball now is back in play. If he doesn't shoot it, he can't touch the ball again. If he shoots it and the guy touches it, he can now touch the ball again and do something.
Yeah,
right?
You know, these guys are taught to flop. There's actually an official call in college and high school called flop. He could have shot the ball and put his hand up to the guy that blocked it and then fall to the ground and tried to get a call like he was fouled.
He was just so nervous. He didn't realize what he was doing. And like I say, there's no excuse for not shooting the ball. Again, even if you know it's going to be blocked, I got to shoot it because I can get the ball again and shoot it again. But if I don't shoot, I can't touch the ball.
Yeah.
So he couldn't touch the ball again. He's screwed.
That poor kid. I ache for him. You know, a lot of things happened in that game that could have gone different, and so we can't point it all to that guy. But yeah, he'll remember that.
I'm not saying that's the reason they lost. Don't misunderstand me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's the reason they lost. I'm saying that particular point in time, like some of these basketball players aren't very smart, frankly. But anyway, there's no argument in my mind about that he shut it, that he had to shoot it. There's no argument. There's no defense that says, well, it's going to get blocked. Well, then you shoot it anyway. You have to shoot it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
If anything, he should take the ball and bounce it off the guy's nose.
I know. Yeah. Something bounce. Yeah. Hit it. But I think in that, you got to remember, this is spontaneous. It's like you and I right here. It's bang, bang. But I wanted Kelvin Sampson, man. He's been a great coach. And he's actually my age. He's a young man. The other coach was 39. Kelvin is 60. He is 69. So he had 30 years age gap. But Houston's got a great, great program. They'll be back. Obviously, Florida will be back. You got to love basketball. You got to love something like that in America. That's one thing you don't see people fighting like Democrats. And you have rivalries, right? But what is it about sports that we can have? There's certainly people get angry and fight sometimes, but very rarely, maybe 1 or 2% of people will fight in a, like if KU played Missouri or USC, UCLA, or, you know, somewhere that maybe 1 or 2, but in America, we got 15% on the left and 15% on the right that just call each other names constantly, belittle. And then you got the cheerleaders like, here, I'm taking a dig at Carolyn Leavitt again. She's the spokesperson for the president of the United States. I saw her on a show. She's just trash talking everybody she can. That's not her job. She shouldn't be a.
I'd say it is her job, but
no,
let me go
no,
to basketball
it's not her job.
For a second. I don't like basketball because God made short people, and short people can't play basketball.
Well, yeah, but back to why can't we act like sports rivalries? Game's over. We have to go back in the locker room, figure out why we lost, and get better at it.
Well, some people go back and burn cars after rivalries, things like that. But
some
anyway,
do. Very
I don't
rare.
Like basketball because short people can't play it. That's it. It's just
wait a minute. What if one of our three followers is a person, say, under 5'5"?
Yeah, well, they can't play basketball.
Then they can't play basketball. You might have offended them. I like people of all heights, Bob, our listeners.
No, you but, misunderstand. That's factual. It's not an opinion. There's no 5'5" person that can play basketball. We'll put it another way. There's no 5'5" person that can play basketball in the NBA. They can go play basketball at the community basketball rink. So that's what I mean about – that's factual. That's not an opinion.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. And like it or not, if you're not 6'7" these days, you hardly could become a guard. Now, I know there's going to be exceptions. Somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, here's an exception. Here's this, an exception. But, yeah, wait a minute. You know what I'm talking about. If you're not tall and big, look at those guys last night. These guys are big.
You know, so do you think
280 pounds and they're 6'9"? One guy's 7'4". They have one guy had a 7'8" reach or something like that. I mean, these guys are just fundamentally the biggest people on earth.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you and I once had a radio program, Web Talk with Bob, as your email is, folks, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. But a national radio program, Web Talk with Bob. We talked a lot about technology as a referee. And with technology, you and I did a whole series on AI a couple years ago when it's first out. Do you think we'll ever get to where they'll have multiple cameras on the court and you'll literally have the AI referees?
Well, absolutely. But even more than that, we'll have all the players will be AI. Yeah, all the players. And there'll be some star player back in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He'll be monitoring his avatar in some game, but he won't be there.
And circling back around so I can do a little trash talk to, I hope he's a guest of ours so he can respond to this, Peter Navarro, the Trump economic, a number one economic tariff advisor who has an avatar AI guy named Ron Vera who gives him advice on how to run the economy. He's already got an AI guy.
Yeah, I'm not talking about an AI guy on paper. I'm talking a three-dimensional person that's real, physically, playing in an NBA match in a city where the guy that's directing him is in another city.
So even not like a PlayStation game, bigger than that, actual real?
No, a real match. There's real physical people, physical robots, if you will, directed by somebody else.
Oh, wow. There was a movie.
The other day when I said, you know, I could die and still attend all the meetings of my family.
Yeah.
Right? I could be there because all I do generally when I'm with my family anyway is tell stories about the family. So if I was there in a three-dimensional robotic costume or holographic activity, they could just turn to me and I'd say the same stories as if I was there.
Yeah.
And they would make the same jokes, you know.
That, I would say we're within 15 years of that.
I don't know. I don't. I'll be dead. But I'll be back. But I won't even know if I'm down there having a meeting. But I just think it's definitely within the realm of the possibility. The movies will probably have it out before long, where the whole darn movie is no real people there. If they look like people, they act like people, right?
And maybe let me ask. Hey Google. Has there been a movie or a motion picture out that has had AI-generated characters?
I don't know the answer to that specific question, but according to Spicegate.com, Checkpoint, made by New York-based Hungarian director Aaron Filke and Vox's Joss Bong.
Checkpoint. Can you hear this?
Anyway, we're talking about two different things. But
okay, hey Google, stop. So there's been a movie called Checkpoint that has AI-generated characters.
Well, that's different. I mean, I'm not talking about an AI-generated character as an artificial character. I'm talking about a real character, a real physical person. Physical, right? Anyway, listen, I know you watch all the time on these things, but generally I'm not sure if you are watching it.
Grandparents often stand on the sidelines, watching their son or daughter's news-to-family navigate challenges, feeling unsure of how to help. But what if you could offer them a gift that brings confidence, support, and understanding? Welcome to USABFA, the National Association for Blended Families and Single Parents. Grandparents like Jeff and Becky made the choice to gift a USABFA membership, and they saw the difference it made. It became the best decision for their family's future. For less than $4 a month, USABFA provides daily and weekly resources tailored to step family dynamics, on-demand videos, podcasts, and coaching tips, exclusive savings on products and services. This is more than a membership. It's a lifeline. It's a gift that equips your family with the tools and support to thrive together. Join the largest family demographic in America. Turn challenges into milestones and be part of the solution. With USABFA, you're never alone on this journey.
So, yeah, it's about time, folks. Tomorrow, who used to sing?
How many minutes do we have? Usually, let me explain to you what really happens on TV shows. The guy who's the host, who charts the time, he says to the other person, there's about 60 seconds left. We have time for one more question. That way, I don't have to ask you what the time is.
I'm going to start. Okay. I just like to let you pontificate. So, folks, you've been listening to Banter with Bob and Dan. Yeah. We've covered some stuff and we've covered some nonsense, but either way, a couple of guys in the heartland just talking about things that some are interesting to you, some aren't, and we're going to be back probably tomorrow or soon. Bob, anything you want to say to the American
well,
people?
You need to say what I was suggesting. You got to say, hey, we've got 60 seconds left. Do you want to close with anything? That way we know what you never said it yet. I don't know. We got one.
Okay, folks,
left,
we got 30 seconds left. 30 seconds left before I click goodbye.
You but have so a you, question. You, want me to
you open the show, Bob. Every day you open the show, say, I don't open the show, so that technically makes you the host. I'm just more the behind-the-scenes producer.
I'm not, then I'll have to keep track of the time then. Okay, so I don't have any things that can be said in 30 seconds, except that it looks like you may have won the stock market bet, because it looks like the market, I think, is certainly not up as it was this morning. What a ride it was today. If you were with me riding the stock market, you were up thousands of dollars in the morning, and you were down thousands of dollars by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's a ride that is challenging American citizens to put up with the whole tariff situation.
I think it was something written on Truth Social. If you go on Truth Social, you'll see why it went back down. And I'll leave it at that, folks. We're always glad you follow us. Keep following us. Share this with somebody. If you want to write us, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. We're always looking for great fun guests, comments. If you know anybody internationally, I do. I want to hear from people what they're saying about Americans. Do they treat them different? Do they treat it like we were talking about right after World War II, how we treated Japanese? Or maybe Germans. I'm a German. I think Germans, some people didn't trust Germans after World War II. So that's it. We'll see you next time. Keep tuning in to Banter with Bob and Dan.